Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Go. It is the 24th day of June 2016. This is the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. And that's where you go if you want to jump into the chat room and enjoy the multimedia madcap zany extravaganza that is the Horn chat room in the live hours of the program, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Yes, you'll be in there alongside Anatole and Jug of Punch and Trey with more wandering by, especially what with this being Friday on the front porch, there will be more wandering by. We'll see, there's Jules right there. It's like magic the way it happens. Just pick yourself out a screen name and a password, jump right in, and enjoy all the fun. Capably moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although he possesses the skills and the spice of a third-stage guild navigator, has elected not to fold space and become man cave this evening, possibly because he would actually like to be comfortable while moderating both the chat room and Horn Malloy Skype chat group, whereat resides the extraordinary, ordinary roundtable that is Friday on the front porch. Yes. Okay, thank you very kindly to Brother Deacon Asa. Asa says, you're live and loud on my IBM convertible via TuneIn, Professor Kincaid. the IBM convertible. Goodness me, what a machine. So, we've got that going for us, which is good. This is, of course, just a reminder, this is a listener-supported program. We keep all the bills paid, and they are very real, that we keep all the bills paid by listener contributions here. We try to raise $200 an evening. That's assuming that we have met every previous fundraising goal. Now, remember, over at Daily Coast, they need to raise $42,000 by the end of June, or else I don't know what won't happen. But us here at the Horn, we need to raise $375. That's the $200 we try to raise every evening, and that's $175 that's left over from where we have not completed our evening's fundraising goal each and every evening. So $375, and we clear the week, and I pay more bills because they're waiting. Oh yes, they most assuredly are. If you want to participate in helping to keep the program on the air, and many listen but few contribute. If you want to help keep it going, then what you need to do is go to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, click on the tab Contribute, fill out the relevant fields there on page one. If you'd like to become a subscriber, you are welcome to do so. We encourage people to do so. Just click the box that says Make This a Recurring Monthly Donation and go get to the next screen. And that's where you can choose PayPal, various credit cards, etc. You don't need the pushy questions about who you work for and where you work. That would be You don't have to put that in there. I think that's probably a leftover in that PayPal plugin. That's probably a leftover from like a political button or something like that. But you don't need to do that. Okay? Okay. As for the U.S. Postal Service, which some of you prefer, the mailing address here is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V 25801. And that's for checks and money orders made payable to The Horn, not made payable to Bob Kincaid. I never see him. Boss Man Wayne goes to the mailbox and most every day and puts on his spider-proof gloves and reaches into the echo chamber. But if you'll let me know that you've sent something along, Boss Man Wayne can leave the spider-proof gloves in the truck and just take his handy hardened hickory axe handle with him in case he runs into any Klansmen along the way. Yes. Klansmen. Jesus Christ. Oh, well, capitalism. They'll do business with anybody. Sure. So that's how that all goes. Now, as noted, it is Friday on the front porch. Here in about 55 minutes and change, we will fire that up. Sparky will fire that up. And we will engage the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable that ends the week each and every week here at the Horn. If you've never participated, it's very easy to do. First, you want Skype. We have one phone line that others can use if they absolutely cannot figure out how Skype works. And that phone number is, of course, the stress line, 304-663-4676. If you're able to use Skype, don't use the stress line. But at any rate, you're welcome to participate. As far as the Skype side of it goes, if you've never done it before, simply send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, and he'll see it. And as long as you put a little note in there saying Horn, The Horn, FOTFP, Front Porch, something to let him know that you're not, you know, just the usual scammer, because they exist on Skype as well as anywhere else on the interweb tubes. Then he'll admit you into the group, and you'll be part of the conversation. Okay, so that takes care of most of the preliminaries. Yeah, where to begin? Well, a nationwide and worldwide radio program would, it would seem, begin with the Brexit, because that's what everybody else has been talking about all day. Because the national consciousness is single issue oriented, I guess. I don't know. But I'm sure there has been a great deal of analysis of the Brexit vote all day long. When I saw the results early this morning, it occurred to me that time flies when you're having dumb. Why, it was scarcely 12 years ago. Not quite 12 years ago, 11 years ago and change, that we in the United States found out that in the wake of our November election in 2004, a British newspaper had published a headline with that said, "How can 200 million people be so stupid?" Because, of course, that was in the wake of giving a second presidential term to Dim Leader. But my oh my, time sure flies when you're having dumb. Because now the foo is on the other shit. And in point of fact, one wonders how so many people in the United Kingdom can be so unutterably stupid as to have done what they did yesterday. For they voted to leave the EU. A majority of the people in the UK voted to pretend that that the island of Great Britain and that little bitty chunk of the Irish island known as Northern Ireland. So in other words, England, Wales, Scotland, Northern Ireland. They voted to pretend that they were an island unto themselves and not a part of the main. To recall the words of John Donne. And they voted to leave the European Union. They voted to leave that organization, which was primarily dedicated to Europe not doing to itself what it has a long and bloody history of doing, to wit, tearing itself to pieces. So, and by the way, it is not lost on me that a whole bunch of the people who were in favor of the Brexit look across the pond at us, at the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini, and say, by Jove, he seems just the sort of fellow we need here. Ho, 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 ho. Last night was a shovel full of shit tossed onto the still settling earth of the grave of Member of Parliament Joe Cox, who was murdered by a man screaming, "Put Britain first, Britain first." Remember, for those of you who saw the Austin Powers movies, Mike Myers, in the title character, uttering the famous phrase, "Sound as a pound, baby." Well, as of this morning, the pound is not so sound. As of this morning, the British pound sterling has hemorrhaged something on the order of 10% of its value because a bunch of idiots decided to drive the country right off a cliff. Markets in Europe were rocked by what happened. The head of the EU said that they will not shilly-shally about in getting Great Britain out of the EU. The process could take as much as 2 years, according to some articles I've read. But they're not going to fool around any, and they're going to do their dead level best to not have Great Britain stand upon the order of its going, but to go at once, as their old bard once said. In other words, you know, we don't want to keep you. You want out so bad, hurry up and get about going. Don't let the door hit you on the ass on the way out, you fools. And for the half of the country that voted to manifest some degree of sanity, I merely say, sorry, old chap. Now you know how it feels, don't you? Yes, it sucketh marvelous well. Because here in the United States we've been dealing with that, unfortunately, for some time. God Almighty. So that's what the world's talking about. Because, you know, for the most part, the world doesn't give a flying fuck at a rolling donut about a place like Appalachia. Appalachia is a place that is made to be forgotten, made to be ignored. When not being ignored, Appalachia is a place made to be exploited. Exploited for our timber, our coal, our gas, yes, even oil. But when not being exploited, ignored. And it's just as well. Ignored or not, the 20 people who are dead since yesterday would remain as much so. Macbeth said she should have died sooner or later. And West Virginia is a damn mess. It was yesterday, driving around in it, and I had no choice. It was the kind of stuff that that you see on the Weather Channel when, as I said, when they leave their reporters out in the rain during a hurricane. Funnel clouds forming all over the place. Torrential rain, anywhere from 3 to 5 inches in some places, like in an hour. Right now, the little Baptist church down the road from here is sheltering some 200 refugees. Another little Baptist church up the road from here is sheltering another handful. Cleaning supplies are being furiously gathered together because there's a lot of people who have a lot to dig out. Still raining this morning. It may rain yet again tonight. And no, I will not do what the wingnuts do so well and ascribe this to the hand of some invisible sky critter. West Virginia did not get flooded out yesterday because some great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky is upset because a couple of guys can legally pick out a China pattern now. No. No. We have a lot of small streams in West Virginia, the ones that have not yet been buried by the mountaintop removal coal industry. Burying those streams, by the way, is not a good thing. Even when it's deemed necessary. A culvert, you know, in other words, the deliberate, you know, the deliberate redirecting of a stream, got washed out at a shopping center in Elkview yesterday. And hundreds of people who had gone shopping at Kmart and Kroger, who had gone to McDonald's and Boob Evans, et cetera, spent the night in a car. The ones who couldn't get a room at the La Quinta Inn. Because the bridge that ran that was atop that culvert got washed away. The Gauley River, which joins the Kanawha, the New River to form the Great Kanawha, which flows on into the Ohio. The Gauley River at a place called Camden on Gauley hit an all-time record, rising 29 feet above its flood stage. At which point the National Weather Service reporting station stopped recording because, well, it was no longer capable of recording. They thought they had it somewhere that, you know, 29 feet. Yeah, nothing ever, but it did. The Meadow River, that is ordinarily a lovely little stream, became a raging maelstrom. And a whole bunch of my county and into Greenbrier County got underwater in a hurry. The entire town of Raynell, West Virginia, which is just east and over Big and Little Sewell Mountains and down the other side from me, was inundated. And yes, some 20 people are dead. And last I heard, talking to people who were doing relief work, there are hundreds, if not thousands, who are still reported missing. Most of those, hopefully, will be accounted for in due time. 20 of them will not. I have started the clock ticking for the first time that a member of the Republican Party stands up and says that we in West Virginia cannot have emergency relief monies because money, because fiscal conservatism. I know that that will happen as sure as God made little green apples, and if you eat too many of them, it'll give you a bellyache and the runs. And questions for people who live around here. Will abound for some, not for all. Some of the hard, scrabble, stoic Appalachian folks whose parents, grandparents, great-grandparents, great-great-grandparents, and on back sometimes as far as 9 and 10 generations, some of them will look up and say, well, it's God's will. Some of us, however, are not willing to take that easy route out. I'm fortunate. My family is fortunate. Near 80 years ago, when my grandmother went to purchase a piece of ground on which to build her home, she purchased a piece of high ground and situated her house on the highest point thereof. Now, to be fair, little did she know that when she dug her basement, she was putting it right on top of a stream, an underground stream that was very close to the surface. That's a problem, but it's a blessing and a curse. But we're on high ground. Still, everywhere you step, it squishes. And so, we're okay. There are thousands of people in southern West Virginia who still don't have electricity. Electricity strung on toothpicks through forests are no match for torrential floodwaters. The Red Cross is moving in. Activist groups like Cold River Mountain Watch are pulling together shovel brigades to get in and start trying to clear out the mud. And because this is a toxified state, with the toxic waste of our various and sundry industries all around us, one must be very, very, very careful in the cleanup efforts. because, well, it's not just rivers that got out of their banks. So-called settlement ponds, sludge ponds, of which there are hundreds in this state, may well have also been compromised. So that means things like potentially methylchlorohexane methanol and some of the other toxic brew that the coal industry uses may well be in the dirty water runoff. The Elk River that feeds the water supply for Charleston, West Virginia, was a complete and total mess. It got up about 30 feet and had begun receding by today. Places like Richwood have flooded before because they, a place like Richwood sits on fairly low ground over by the Cherry River. It's a charming place when it's not flooding. On the other hand, it's sort of strange to see some of this. Because one of the areas, an area from Sam Black Church to Rupert to Raynell, West Virginia, is underwater, or was underwater. And that area has been settled for something going on 280 years, 260 years. I would know because my multi-great-grandfather was the first person to settle it. And it's rather unusual for the Meadow River to do what it did. For instance, Long Billy McClung, my multi-great-grandfather, walked in order to lay claim to the land, never mind the people who were busy living on it, walked the length of the Meadow River to the Greenbrier River. And the Greenbrier River turned into a god-awful mess as well. But he hiked that, laying his claim. And it is not without notice. Well, let's put it this way. If you drive from here to Raynell along Route US 60, you'll see where entire mountains have been clear cut. No selective logging for us. Just cut it all down, baby. And the nature of an Appalachian mountain is such that while it is, this is a lush and verdant, or would be if it were not so horribly abused, a lush and verdant temperate rainforest, where when even heavy rains fall, the trees that grow so abundantly, each do an individual job. The leaves do a job. The branches do a job. The limbs, the trunk, and God knows the roots do a job of soaking up all of that rainforest water. And that's what makes this such a lush and green place when it's not being brutalized. But the soil on an Appalachian mountain is none too thick. Maybe a foot? Takes 1,000 years to make an inch of soil here. And when you cut down all the trees, there's nothing to stop the rain. And so the rain just runs into the nearest drainage. The drainage becomes overwhelmed in its turn. And then the drainage leaves its banks. And water does that thing which water is ever so very good at. It seeks its own level. We're getting a report from Brother Deacon Gerald, who says, for anyone who cares to know, all is well here at the manor. The destruction is all around me, though. The rivers are mean and nasty-looking with little regard to anything that gets in their way. I'm standing by at home for anyone who needs assistance in my community. Just waiting for the waters to recede enough to get to anyone. Just a few miles from here, my hometown of Clendenin has been totally wiped out. White Sulphur Springs, wiped out. Rainelt, wiped out. And while these things will happen from time to time, those of us who acknowledge the existence of reality know that these things which happen from time to time, and by from time to time we mean every 500 to 1,000 years or so, well, we know that they're going to happen more and more. And on a greater frequency. Why? Well, you know. I know you know. You know I know you know. We're very knowledgeable people. Climate change. I mean, if what happened yesterday was a 500-year event, then the last time it happened outside the living memory of white people here, or European people, depending on your preference of phrasing. It also means it probably did not happen outside the living memory of, say, the indigenous people who lived here, but being as how we killed most of them, the benefit of their knowledge, well, it's not for us. But this is climate change. And it's terrifying. And here's something interesting. Many, many, many of the people who have had their lives upended here will not acknowledge that climate change even exists. And I don't say that to scold. I don't say that to chide. I say that only to acknowledge the reality that lives here. Maybe this would have happened without all the clear cutting. Maybe it would have happened anyway if the mountains that had been denuded and despoiled of their ability to absorb torrential rains hadn't been wrecked and ruined. Precisely. Lottie in the chat room says they won't acknowledge climate change, but they will acknowledge that God did it because of gay marriage. I don't think my composure could take it, but I'm sure that that will be muttered or mumbled or screamed to the rafters in more than one church come Sunday. Forty-four of the 55 counties of West Virginia have been declared by GIRT to be disaster areas. Those people, as Hillary Clinton calls us, have quite a mess on their hands. And it is a mess that is not simply a meteorological anomaly. There was a whole bunch of capitalism in those swirling, destructive waters. In the aftermath, it will be interesting to find out how much benefit our new anybody over 21 can concealed carry a handgun law will help. You know, a pistol is not much use as a damn shovel. But by God, we got us some guns. So that's kind of what's occupied my mind for the last 24 hours or so. I mean, I was out in it repeatedly yesterday, and I got the creeps every time I went out. I mean, even just a few miles north of here, the Wiggling Pig has no power. The only grocery store, the only real grocery store, I mean, there's a Dollar General and a Rite Aid, but the only real grocery store we have has been without electricity for the best part of more than a day. Maybe it's back now, I don't know. But every, and this is important, and oddly, and in a way, it ties in with what we've been discussing previously. Things like this show you just how thin and frayed is the thread upon which one's approximation of culture hangs. Oh, and hey, more good news. It's not just the gun bill we've got. If you don't have clean water to drink in West Virginia right now, it's legal to drink raw milk. Assuming, of course, old Bessie, your milk cow, survived the flooding, Gerald points out. And you could always use your concealed carry pistol to shoot old Bessie if and you get hungry enough. Thanks, teabagger legislature. Thanks. For nothing, you useless, worthless bunch of assholes. But there's the commonality is learning how tenuous everything is. How sort of just in the nick of time everything is structured to be. And, for instance, there are accounts, and I read one, and it was harrowing, of how overwhelmed the Level 1 Trauma Center was by 53 gunshot wounds in Orlando near 2 weeks ago. Hospitals, nursing homes are stretched to their limits right now in this region. And it doesn't take much. One gets a sense. It doesn't take much at all to get to a state of completely overwhelming those fragile systems. So that's the news from Mount Colby gone. Well, damn, that was not inspiring. The power we just took a power surge. I hope we will make it through 3 hours of Friday on the front porch. But having just experienced that, hoping is about all I've got. Because that system, our antiquated early 20th century technology, coal-fired, decentralized or centralized power grid, coal-fired, has about all it can stand, too. Parts of Jim Justice's Greenbrier Resort, where the hoi polloi go to live in their vacation homes, is underwater. There are places that cannot be reached by anything but emergency vehicles, and some not by that. Even rescuers had to be rescued because floodwaters are not easy to negotiate or navigate. Prayer won't do any good. Prayer is useless. Prayer is meaningless. For 20 people here, the universe has ended. And for a whole lot of America, what has happened here in this little locale is just a great big ball of so what? Forget it, Jake. It's Appalachia. So we got all that. Of course, the question obtains, what do you want to talk about? It's about 16 minutes before the hour, 16 minutes or so before we'll fire up the extraordinary, ordinary roundtable that is Friday on the front porch. And whatever you want to bring to the table, you are welcome to bring. Apparently, in the wake of the hashtag Brexit, B-R-E-X-I-T, another one has cropped up here in the new United States of Merca. And that is Texit, T-E-X-I-T. there are a bunch of jackasses in the state of Texas, Stan, who have decided it would be a lovely time now for Texas, Stan, to leave the union because they've never really gotten over not being able to secede and having their asses handed to them trying to do it the first time. So they're thinking maybe the second time through we'll be a little more generous and say, sure, goodbye now. Nice, huh? Oh, yeah. According to Vocative, more than 5,800 people tweeted Texit. Mm-hmm. Good morning, Greg Abbott, TX. We're ready for a vote on Texit. What's the holdup? In the event that Hillary Clinton becomes POTUS, Gov Abbott, can we begin plans for Texit? Thanks for your superb leadership. Now, granted, it's just a few cranks in Texas tweeting this, but, well, if a few thousand cranks are tweeting it, more cranks are, you know, thinking it. And I'm a hard nose on this. I know there are a lot of liberals and progressives who would say, well, hell, let them go. Good riddance. But I don't subscribe to that. Too many people died too horrible a death to keep that from happening 150 years ago, 155 years ago. Todd, with a question. Subject line, coal ash retaining ponds. Bob, what happens to all the sludge? Why are they not more highly regulated? If so, that's past stupidity. Well, it's not just coal ash, Todd. There are hundreds of sludge dams all over West Virginia that have nothing to do with coal ash. Coal ash is produced from the burning of coal. So you've got coal ash ponds in North Carolina, Virginia, Missouri, Alabama, Tennessee, Georgia, New York. Everywhere that there's a coal-fired power plant, there's a coal ash pond. What becomes of it? Well, it just kind of stays there. They move it around some, and they try to build a, you know, little earthen dam to keep it in place, but those things break sometimes, as people found out to their horror in Tennessee in, what was it, late 2010, 12? And then the coal ash, which has all the nastiness of coal pressed down and shaken together and multiplied almost exponentially. Things like arsenic, cadmium, barium, selenium, lead. It just goes wherever the water will take it. Until somebody comes along like the TVA and cleans it up and goes and dumps it on a poor black community in Alabama. That's really what happened. Now, what we have so many of here, I mean, yes, we've got some coal ash ponds. But what we have here are the sludge ponds that come from mountaintop removal mining and underground coal mining. Because coal, you see, has to be cleaned. It has to be scrubbed. It has to be made all shiny before it goes onto trucks and trains and boats and heads to places like power plants or, you know, China or India or Russia or the Netherlands. And the chemicals that are used to clean that coal are pumped behind giant earthen dams. Again, once again, I remind you, the largest dam in the Western Hemisphere is not the Hoover Dam. It is, in fact, the Brushy Fork Impoundment in western Raleigh County, where they do mountaintop removal and blast and everything right next to it. It's rated for about 9.8 billion gallons of toxic waste. It's holding about 7 right now. Not far from that is the Shoemate Dam. It holds about 2.8 billion gallons of toxic waste. What happens to all the sludge? It sits there. And everybody just hopes that it never gets loose, although it does tend to percolate into the earth and percolate into the aquifer and percolate into people's living and percolate into people's bodies. People who use well water in places like Printer watch their children's teeth dissolve from brushing their teeth, just like Mama said. And people came along and said, "That's what we call around here Mountain Dew mouth. That's because mamas give their babies Mountain Dew in their baby bottles." Mm-hmm. Not much of an answer, Todd, but it's the best I got. Under the subject line, Euroanalysis. Oh, clever. Steve, a member of the Trinity of Steve, writes, "Interesting, the simple majority split pulling UK out of the euro. I say euro because it's always a matter of the common denominator of wealth that causes all pretenses of union and shared prosperity to melt away, like ice on a July beach. The euro giveth, the euro taketh away. The northern countries are tired of seeing their commonwealth diluted by the ongoing doldrums of the southern economies, of course, and doesn't it always seem to be this way? I guess you can have too many 45-day paid vacations and 6-hour shifts working at the German pencil factory after all. I'm not gloating, though. The arithmetic tells the story, as always, an aging population whose entitlements and retirement packages are beginning to eat into the artificiality of a shared prosperity of centralized banking. But the bureaucrats in Belgium, I suppose, can only do so much. Shifting wealth around, redistributing income, sharing the pain, gives me a warm, gurgling sort of feeling deep in my guts to see how the rest of the European world deals with the continent-wide global governance and common cause, economic and otherwise. Pass the champagne and book a flight to London. Great place to celebrate a cheap fourth this year. Regards, Steve in China." Brother Usher Steve in New York, also a member of the Trinity of Steve, says, "In regards to my hillbilly brothers and sisters, anywhere we can donate? The Red Cross has moved in. I'm kind of agnostic about the Red Cross. Any organization that would ever have turned its running over to the likes of Liddy Dole has serious moral problems in my book. For now, that's about it. Mostly the hillbillies are gathering up mops and brooms and scrubbing and cleaning supplies and dropping them off in designated locations where they're being passed out by the National Guard. And again, the Red Cross is there. In Shreveport, Jack writes, subject line, "Texit. Holy crap on the hashtag Texit. Tweeted this 20 hours ago. First thing I've heard since on that tag was what you said. My tweet was in jest, but I should have known there would be those who'd want Texas Stan to get in on the UK thing. Is Jack had said, I guess the next time the TX freaks want to secede, they can use the tag Texit. Well, they are, and they have. Scott pointing out, with the approval of Punky. It's just a faint and fuzzy fraction of a memory, but at some point in the course of my formal education, I learned that the Texas Constitution allows for a breakup of Texas into five separate states. I'm not sure what the effect of such a move would have if they chose to remain part of the U.S. Of course, if Texas pulls a Brexit, it wouldn't matter at all. And I've seen that before, and I think that five-set, they had the chance to do that when they became a state, but they can't go back and have a do-over. Oh, what else? Let's see. We already got here. The pound's taking a beating. Maybe it'll be a rebounding pound. Oh, some good news. Every now and then, you know, capitalism gets something right. I know, for instance, that there are a lot of people who hate PayPal. That's what we use. But for us, it's been very effective. But guess what? You remember Pastor Stephen Dickhead Anderson out there in Arizona at the Faithful Word Baptist Church in Phoenix? Well, he is right pissed off. Why? Because people have gotten active. And after the filthy things he said about the massacre in Orlando, they don't have a PayPal account anymore. And they tried going from PayPal to GiveLet, and they don't have that account anymore. Then they went to QGive. They don't have that anymore. BitPay. They don't have that anymore. They don't even have an iTunes podcast anymore. Brother Jimenez and Brother Romero's PayPal accounts have been shut down. So I guess it is occasionally possible for the corporate world to get things right. Yeah. So just a little happy news to wrap up the filibobster. Well, here it is, about 2 minutes before the hour, and time to start the extraordinary, ordinary roundtable that is Friday on the front porch on the Horn. Again, if you wish to participate by phone, the stress line is here for you, 304-663-4676, 304-663-HORN, but that's only if you can't use the Skype chat room, okay? Otherwise, Sparky Dunk on Skype. Gerald taking a run at Todd's question, what happens to the sludge? Buffalo Creek, West Virginia, happens to the sludge. Yeah, just look it up. Heavy rains back in February of 1972, too. Oh, yeah, you're right. Brother Usher Steve says, wait for it. Christian persecution, that's exactly it. It got so bad that Pastor Stephen Anderson climbed up on top of his pulpit and started screaming. He literally jumped up on top of his podium. Oh, hell, why not? Let's enjoy a little Schadenfreude, courtesy of Pastor Stephen Anderson.
There is a full out. about war going on this subject right now. The bunch of filthy sodomite perverts, and if you don't like it, get out of here. They're at war with us tonight. And you know what? If you're fearful and afraid and you don't want to stand up for the truth, just get out of here, because I'm sick of looking at your cowardly face.
Yeah. Amen.
Not going to put up with it. Let me tell you something. It's war. You know what the filthy sodomites have done toward our church and us and our friends and our fellow pastors that actually have the guts to say what needs to be said? Here's what they've done in the last few weeks. They got our PayPal account shut down so that we can't take any more online donations. We set up with another company, GiveLet. They got that shut down. QGive, they got that shut down. BitPay, they got that shut down. They shut down our iTunes podcast. They shut down Brother Jimenez's PayPal account. They shut down Brother Romero's PayPal account. They shut down Paul Wittenberger's store where he sells all of his films and everything. His livelihood, that's his job. I mean, that's how he makes his money. They shut down his Framing the World store off Big Cartel. I mean, the landlord of Pastor Jimenez is saying, hey, we're not going to renew your lease. I mean, these people are dedicated. These people are researching. They're finding out, you know, where we bank. They're finding out who we do business with. They're trying to get us shut down on all fronts. And you know what? Let me tell you something. I'm sick of it, and I'm not going to back down, and I'm sick of people not backing me up on this. And you know what?
Did you hear that little bit of noise? That was him climbing up on top of his podium. Sort of ape-like. And he's bent over kind of ape-like, barking at the faithful and pointing his finger at them.
If you're not going to back us up, then get out of here. We don't need your help. You know what? We have hundreds of people here that will not compromise. And if you're not one of them, then get out. I don't want to hang around with a bunch of fag hags and a bunch of queer baits and a bunch of effeminates. Get out. Look, no one in a million years would have thought when I was a child that our country would ever accept this stuff amongst Christians. You are insane. You think I'm preaching too hard? You have lost your mind. And if you ever say the word LGBT community to me, you might as well just walk up to me and just say, you know what? I'm a brainwashed idiot. I don't read the Bible. I don't love God. I'm just a brainwashed fool that has my mind filled with TV, Hollywood, and can't think for myself.
You know, it's pathetic. I count at least 6 children within the frame of that clip. Did you hear the one little child? Ha, 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 ha. Yeah. But he's not happy. Steven Anderson isn't. Meanwhile, Brother Usher Steve says, subject line, sodomites at war. Actually, we were never at war. But if you insist, even if you insist we are, we've kind of won the war. Well, there is that. But I don't know how it would feel to walk. I mean, Phoenix is a big place. And I'm sure that's not the only church preaching hate. It's kind of like West Virginia with its concealed carry law. You never know when you're walking around people which one is the hate-filled monstrosity that's going to turn everything sideways. There is that, Steve. Steve knows. He just said fool. Doesn't that mean he's off to hell? Because, I mean, the Bible says that. That's the straight to hell card. Anyone who says thou fool. But he said, he didn't say that. He didn't say that. He didn't say thou fool. So, you know, the great big bearded juvenile delinquent's a stickler for, well, I don't know. Hey, thank you very kindly, Jack in Shreveport, getting us started this evening. Much obliged. That means we have 325 to go. $325 to go in fundraising this evening. Thank you very, very much, Jack. Thank you very much indeed. 325. 10 at 3250, 32 and a half people at 10. See how quickly I get in trouble? Yeah. Earther, meanwhile, says, I think he's really talking about himself, Steven Anderson, keeping folks' phone numbers and addresses. Everything he said is projection. Those are things he wants to do. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So let's get going with the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. We'll take a little break and then see what's on the mind of the everyday experts that make up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Where is he? Steve asks. Steven Anderson. He's in Phoenix at the Faithful Word Baptist Church, which is probably in some dilapidated old shopping center or something. But please note, the Baptists refuse to do anything about him. Okay, break time. This is listener-supported conversation radio, Friday on the Front Porch. This is The Horn. And I'm Bob Kincaid. Yeah, kind of hard to avoid that one in a situation such as we've got here, of course. Creedence Clearwater Revival, Who'll Stop the Rain? It is Friday on the Front Porch for this, the 24th day of June, 2016. It's about 10 minutes past 7 p.m. here in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. And let's run over and check in with longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran, Horn Malloy Skype chat group moderator, Sparky. Hey, Sparky.
Hey, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, you're great.
Okay. I just wanted to say I got I had a nice conversation the other night with Scott in Sweden.
Yeah.
Actual voice conversation, not just typing. But he's still in for the $100 this month if we can beat the Swede, but I told him that it's not looking good for beating him.
This is looking kind of tough for beat the Swede. If we caught up tonight, that would mean we would have, let me get my calendar open here. Let's see, 25th, 26th. That would mean we would have to make our fundraising goal Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. If we got completely caught up tonight.
So that was a message, and I just wanted to give him a shout out. We talked about other things, but I won't bore you.
Well, I don't know. I don't necessarily know that it would be boring, but yeah, I understand.
I hope Jules is muted now.
Me too.
Anyway, I was going to say, I know what that flooding shit's about. I got flash flooded, remember, in December 14.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, that was no fun at all.
I mean, it's just kind of weird to look at photographs of places like White Sulphur Springs and, you know, just gone.
Mm-hmm.
Weird to see places burnt, you know, burning down in the middle of floodwaters.
Yeah, I saw that. And it hit a bridge or something. It was going down the creek or river.
Yeah, it's really kind of hard to define creek, river, you know, torrent.
Mm-hmm. Well, my situation was a creek. It just got inundated with water, and then there was a lot of wood trash and everything in it, and then it went down to Highway 99, where there's a bridge right near a subdivision, and it just put everything in there and made its own dam.
Well, you know, a lot of people didn't want to evacuate around here because they were afraid of looting and pillaging, but even as we speak, Sparky, I just, my phone just delivered a, no, I'm wrong.
Oh, a reverse 9/11 call?
Well, no, it turned out that was last night's flash flood warning. I was going, please, God, not another one. So, but still, this is going to be a long time getting over.
Yeah, well,
I remember when you got flash flooded, it was because, the creek had been allowed to become sort of choked with brush and stuff. Do I remember that right?
Yeah, that's what I was talking about. It washed it all the way down the creek and hit where Highway 99 bridge is, not a little overcrossing bridge on the creek, hit that bridge, and then it just backed up everything. It just worked like a dam. And then I walk outside, and all I see is a wall of water coming towards us. Kind of looked like the Terminator creeping over the ground in his metallic state. And it was on us in minutes. But
it's kind of the exact opposite of that here from all the clear cutting and crap. Instead of things choking off streams, this was a matter of, you know, there was just too much for the streams to handle.
Yeah, and then water just finds it. It's got to go somewhere.
Well, I'm sure that I've been watching the updates via the Gazette, and
I've never underestimated the power of water. Having been on a lot of rivers around here in my younger days, we used to have a cabin up on the Trinity River, and we were up there when the water got really high one time, and you could hear the water moving the boulders down the river.
Oh, that would be impressive. Well, in this case, a couple of two of the people killed were little children who slipped into floodwaters and were washed away. It was awful, just awful.
Yeah, I heard one was walking with her mom, his or her mom.
Yeah,
and just some people just don't know the power of water, and they just do stupid stuff.
And you know this stuff happens so fast that, I mean, I don't reckon anybody who said let's go to the Kroger's were planning on spending the night there. I mean, it's astonishing.
What, there were like 500 people in that mall?
Yeah, it was hundreds.
Okay, let me see if I can get Gerald in now. He just updated his Skype, I think.
Yeah, I just saw him come online.
Maybe not. Let me see. No, I'm still getting the same message.
Now, if one was to believe in a vengeful deity, the Greenbrier Resort's world class golf course, much of it, a whole lot of its greens and so forth are, you know, underwater right now, or were underwater. And
there's a golf tournament coming.
And there's a PGA golf tournament coming up in 2 weeks.
So where do you think FEMA will head?
Well, I mean, see, this. Remember when the derecho hit back in 2012?
Yeah.
Yeah, the ice, the water, the generators, the everything went to Jim Justice's golf tournament at the Greenbrier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's this is miserable. The fish hatchery over in Greenbrier County lost something like 18,000 rainbow trout hatchlings. Tyler Hearn, a fish biologist with the state, spent today shoveling dead fish from the hatchery grounds. He said, 80% of our fish are either in town or in the new river, I guess. People saw fish swimming down Main Street.
And they weren't mature fish yet, were they?
No. Hatchlings, fingerlings, things like that. I mean, they grow them big. They keep them there till they're big enough to do releases. I mean, there are certain times of the year they send out the stock trucks. And then you'll see what is commonly referred to as the stock truck parade. And the anglers will just drive along behind the stock truck till the stock truck stops. And you could swear that some of those trout actually get caught before they get hung up on hooks before they actually get in the water. Those are some dedicated fly casters, Sparky.
Oh, I went to a PG&E lake when I was a kid one time when they were planting fish. Just a fish in a group.
So you get the idea.
Yeah.
Well, let's check in and see who else is with us this evening.
Gerald's trying to get in, but there's a problem with his machine.
I'm not sure. I don't know. I don't know what kind of internet he's got there. He's surrounded by a bunch of devastation right now.
Well, he had to update his Skype, too, even rebooted.
Oh, yeah. Gerald shows as online here with me.
Yeah, but I mean, I tried to add him and call him, and it won't pick up because it's being cranky. or they update Skype, or they're using an unsupported device.
Yeah, Gerald's not known for unsupported device usage.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm here anyway.
Oh, hi, hey, everybody. Hey, Billable Rick.
Yeah.
Hi, Rick.
Hey.
This is Trey from Kentucky Stan.
Yeah, hey, Trey. I think you were in the group, was it last week or week before?
Yes. Yes, yeah. This is my third week in a row. I'm trying to make
awesome.
It a habit.
Awesome. So I was right on both counts. Yeah, I got a bunch of stuff that I got to get filed in the next week or so. So I'm going to be kind of a bit brief here today. But, you know, I my heart goes out to you all, Bob, in that part of the country. You know, how much rain did you get and how short a time again? I didn't quite catch that.
It was in some places it was as much as 5 inches in a couple of hours.
Wow. Wow. And I did get the fact that you sit on higher ground, so you're okay. But, you know, obviously there's a lot of people affected, and 20 people dead.
Thus far.
Okay.
There's still people listed as missing.
Wow, that's horrible. That's horrible. well, you know, I just hope you guys get through that somehow. You know, fuck the golf tournament as far as I'm concerned.
You know, the great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky may have taken care of that. It's kind of hard to rehab a golf tournament, a golf course that's been flooded out in 2 weeks' time.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is. I mean, you know, is it a real hilly golf course? I think I've seen.
There are some hills, but it's not extraordinarily so. I mean, it's one of the oldest premier golf courses in the on the East Coast.
Wow, wow!
I mean, we're talking about a place where Slammin' Sammy Snead and Ben Hogan played.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, Sam Snead was the club pro there at one point in time.
Wow, wow. Have they had, like, major tournaments there, like the U.S. Open or PGA?
No. In point of fact, at the West Virginia State Democratic Convention, Jim Justice vowed that we will have the U.S. Open at his golf course. And he says, when Jim Justice tells you he'll do something, you can count on it's going to happen.
Hey, I saw him on TV recently. You know, TNT has a new production of Roots. You know, he played Kunta Kinte.
Oh, did he? Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Jimta Jinte.
Jimta Jinte. Yeah. Yeah, I haven't watched any of those episodes yet. I have it on my DVR. I can't convince my son yet to watch them, so we haven't watched them yet. But. I don't know if anybody's watched that, but it seemed like it might be pretty good. Maybe it was the History Channel. I don't know. Yeah, it was maybe the History Channel.
I confess I haven't, but I don't watch a lot of TV because, you know, we cut the cable.
I hear you. Well, anyway, my thoughts go out to all of you. I won't use the prayers because that's too trite, you know.
Thoughts and prayers, y'all. Thoughts and prayers. God is love.
Warm vibes, I guess we'll say.
But, so, you know, at least the Baptists down the road have put aside their hates and their prejudices a little bit, and they're just, you know, they've taken in refugees and they're feeding them and making sure that they've got appropriate shelter for a while.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's a good thing. I'll let somebody else get on now. I can always circle back and we can talk about that crazy Supreme Court decision where you can basically, you know, it's fair game for people with any kind of past criminal record, you know, as far as searching you.
Yeah, your papers are not in order.
That's right. All right.
Take care, Rick.
You betcha.
And in addition, we've got Jules in the room, we've got Scott with us, and we got Charlie.
Hello,
hey, Jules.
Hi. Just a quick note, Bob. The Roots series is on the History Channel as a website, so you can actually go on there and you can watch all of the episodes. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Has anybody caught the one show, the O.J. Simpson American Made, on television at all?
I've watched an episode or two. It's pretty good, actually.
It's very good.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, my son got bored with that one, so we stopped watching that. But I'll have to watch it when he's not when he's on the computer.
Well, it's a story, but it's kind of like in documentary form, and it kind of talks to all those people.
Yeah, I missed all but 19 minutes of the first episode, so that was sort of an important episode, I'm sure, you know.
Yeah, it was still good. Worth watching. So if anybody has the time to watch that, it's always good too.
Yeah, yeah.
I've got a good friend in one of our chat rooms that is watching it, and he thinks it's really, really good. I'm gonna have to wait until it comes on the internet and watch it, because we have cable pumping through the house, but I don't turn the TV on, so I haven't turned the TV on for like 5 or 6 years. So it's other thing than television. But anyway,
hey Bob.
Hey, what's up?
I got a kind of a, it's either historical or theological observation or question about this European Union Brexit story, if you want to take a stab at it.
Yeah, go ahead.
Do you remember, oh Lord, in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and maybe into the early 2000s, there was a father and son team who were part of a religious organization called the Worldwide Church of God. And the father was Herbert W. Armstrong.
Garner Ted Armstrong.
That's right. In the World Tomorrow. Okay. I used to listen to them years ago on the radio, and they had a rather interesting take, theologically speaking. And one of the things that their official doctrines was that in, I think, the book of Revelation, or maybe it's the book of Daniel, whatever, they talk about the ten-horned beast. And their teaching was along the lines that what that represented was the ten-nation European Union. Do you remember that, or have any knowledge about?
Oh yeah, yeah. You're dredging up stuff that was better left buried, but
okay.
I remember that stuff. Yes.
But if I'm not mistaken,
I think Hal Lindsey with his late great Planet Earth and that series of Bilge picked up on that as well.
Yeah, I did. I'm familiar with Lindsey, but I don't remember anything that he wrote about the European Union. Although one interesting oddity about Hal Lindsey, about every year to 18 months, he would come out with a new book of so-called prophecy with new pronouncements of doom and gloom and establishing, a drop-dead point for the world and the universe. And if you go on Amazon and look at his list of books through the 70s, 80s, 90s, and even today, I think he's still around. About every year, year and a half, 2 years, he writes a new book with new pronouncements. But looking back, none of them have even come remotely
anywhere
close.
Near true.
Exactly, exactly. So, oh God, it's just all theological nonsense in my book. But with the European Union in the news recently now, I just out of nowhere, I happened to think, wait a minute, isn't there a theological twist here? And then I thought of good old Garner Ted and Herbert W. Armstrong and some of their wacky sayings and teachings.
And Garner Ted Armstrong, I'm just seeing here, also operated under a pseudonym. He wrote a book called Churchill's Gold under the name William Talboy Wright.
Oh, wow. I don't remember that. But, well, he had a falling out with Daddy Armstrong, who Daddy Armstrong died in the mid-80s, because he had been around since the 30s. He started out on radio up in the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, he was born in Portland.
Yeah. And then after Daddy Armstrong died, Herbert W. took over, and then he had a falling out with the Worldwide Church of God, which I think was based in Pasadena, California by then.
Yeah.
So he apparently couldn't keep his fly up and had a number of indiscretions. So he was kicked out and ended up down in, I think, Tyler, Texas, with his own church, which was similar in theology to the Worldwide Church of God.
But, and he was a big pal of Merle Haggard.
Was he? I didn't know that.
Yeah. Merle Haggard once said of him, he was like a professor to me. What education I have, I owe to him.
Oh, wow. Well, he was always fascinating to listen to, and he was quite an attractive gentleman. I mean, he could have worked in Hollywood if he had wanted to, but he latched on to the religion scam, I guess, because that's where the real money is. But he died about 10 years ago, and I don't know whatever became of the two churches, Worldwide Church of God and whatever Garner Ted's little outfit was in Tyler, Texas.
Yeah, it's a small community called Bullard on Lake Palestine, no less.
Oh, God. Jeez. But anyway, watch out for the 10-horned beast, because now that one of the horns has dropped out or dropped off, what does that mean for our eternal souls and the written in stone, maybe, future of mankind?
Well, right. See, let's see. I'm just looking at Wikipedia here, but the year 1972 had been prominent in Herbert W. Armstrong's prophetic views, as elaborated in a booklet called 1975 in Prophecy! ! January 1972 was supposed to be the conclusion of the second of two 19-year time cycles, which, according to the elder Armstrong, had begun in 1953 when the world tomorrow began to be heard over Radio Luxembourg in Europe. According to his theory, at the conclusion of the second 19-year time cycle, the members of the church were expected to flee to a place of refuge, which leading ministers had speculated could be the ancient city of Petra in Jordan. Following this flight, World War III supposedly would begin, with the United States of Europe rising up to overthrow both the United States of America and the United Kingdom. This fitted with both the Armstrongs' teachings of a theory generally referred to as British Israelism, outlined in the Elder Armstrong's book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy.
Yeah, I had forgotten about the British Israelism angle, where they thought that the nation of England was like a lost tribe of Israel or something along those lines.
Oh, Jesus, God. His program was broadcast in German, Spanish, French, Italian, and Russian.
Hey, can I just weigh in real quickly?
Yeah, jump in, Rick.
It sounds like these guys were smoking crack before it became fashionable.
The wild thing was they were on radio and TV literally everywhere on the planet. You couldn't turn a radio on during any part of the day without hearing The World Tomorrow. And there was also the thing where they would send all like metric tons of free literature. And years ago, I used to have them send me stuff. They had a monthly magazine called the Plain Truth Magazine, where they would print these articles and then little booklets and pamphlets. And I got to wondering, how the hell can they afford this? Well, it turns out one of their church teachings was that the members have to tithe 40%, not 10%, your typical tithe, but 40%. So that kind of explained how they... How they could afford all the media and the printed material.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah, hey.
Steve from Georgia Stan.
Hey, Steve, what's happening, man?
Oh, man, I remember they used to run these Hal Lindsey's Late Great Planet Earth movies back at the independent, fundamental, premillennial Baptist church that I was forced to attend.
Yes, you do.
Yeah, and they would have the whole congregation scared shitless, man. And they would timestamp these things, and he kept moving the time forward. You know, as to the Ayatollah Khomeini was the Antichrist. Well, that never transpired. So then they would move it forward and they would keep running these things, you know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was one boogeyman after another.
Right.
And I love, you know, I love this British Israelism because that Scott was talking about, because that's predicated on the notion that the British are really, no, really, the descendants of the lost tribes of Israel. I mean, the fascination with the lost tribes of Israel. You know, American Indians are the descendants of the lost tribes of Israel. The British are the lost tribes of Israel. Everybody's the lost tribes of Israel except the lost tribes of Israel.
And Bob, I would like to get your opinion on how do you think that this EU British thing is going to affect us over here as far as the economy. I know the futures tanked today and so did the market. And how do you think that's going to affect us going forward?
Well, we don't really export that much to Britain, nor do they export that much to us. I mean, we have the special relationship, and maybe it's extra special now in terms of both countries having done inexorably stupid things at the polls. I mean, there was one guy who was interviewed who said, well, right, I voted to leave. But I never figured my vote would actually count. Okay, then, buddy.
But, so, in your opinion, it'll have little or no effect? Is that what I'm hearing from you?
I'm no economist, but I don't.
Right.
I don't see it having as much of an effect here as it's going to have across the pond. I mean, I had a note from Chris in Germany who said she'd already run across one subject of the crown who was in the process of applying for German citizenship. Because, see, the thing is, the whole Brexit thing, no matter what kind of face they try to put on it, it was racist, okay? It was run by and driven by the right wing British, in large part, who were afraid that Great Britain was going to become all brown because of those people.
And didn't one of the higher ups resign today? He said
Cameron resigned. Yeah,
he bailed. Yep, said he couldn't steer the ship the way that the masses wanted it steered, so he's out of here.
Well, he didn't want to be at the helm when the bilge rose up onto the main deck.
But isn't he the one that brought it up for vote?
Well, yeah, he did because he was compelled to.
Right.
And what a stupid thing that was.
Yeah. Hey, Bob.
Yeah.
I just emailed you two items that cropped up in the news today. One of them was, I think, from the Washington Post, having to do with people are stumbling in Britain are stumbling over themselves to Google EU to find out what the hell it is, only hours after the nation voted to leave the EU. I just sent you that. And on that same email, there's another article that gives a chart that shows the breakdown of the various age groups who supported Brexit versus the ones who wanted to remain in the European Union. And it's interesting that the younger voters wanted no part of it, and the older voters wanted to leave, wanted to create change and, quote, take their country back. And where have we heard that before, that breakdown of younger voters not wanting a thing to do with the lunatic fringe and racist craziness,
yeah,
whereas the older voters, you know, want to vote in the orange menace, Donald Trump, or as I call him,
I've just got this image now of of some guy sitting at the pub saying, "Get us out of the bloody EU." What the fuck is the EU anyway?
Yeah, we don't know what it is, but we want the hell out of it.
Jesus.
Bob?
Yeah. Hey, Charlie.
Going back to what you were talking about earlier about, what was his name, Garner Ted Armstrong or whatever?
Yes.
Yeah, this this doctrine that he promoted, I mean, back when, if you look at it from a historical perspective, back when Nebuchadnezzar had his vision and Daniel interpreted it, the United States didn't even exist back then. It has
well,
nothing
that's
to
true.
Do
it, 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 it hadn't been discovered by Europeans or Levantine peoples at all.
And the book of Revelation deals with the destruction of the Roman Empire. It has nothing to do with present day.
It has nothing to do with the present day.
I guess people are just wanting to have some type of fantasy or something. I don't know. It's weird.
Well, a lot of it.
They kind of get off on speculating about it.
Well, it's the dynamic has to do, I think, with seeing patterns that are not there and making connections that support their political or theological way of thinking. And it's always a stretch, you know, but they somehow.
Yeah, but Scott, they also want to see Jesus come back. And they want to see, and they want to see him put on a show not seen since the Circus Maximus of Rome. They want to, I mean, a lot of these Dominionists and Reconstructionists, they're waiting for him because you know Jesus is going to haul all the Jews up in front of him, and he's going to say, "Yeah, I'm back, and I'm pissed. Every one of y'all, bow to me, acknowledge that I'm Messiah." And then when they don't, he's going to turn to all the Christians and say, "Gig 'em like frogs, put them to the sword." And there's a lot of people want to be there for the gigging.
Yeah.
They get off on it.
What?
And they also want to be there because they know that Jesus is going to look at him and go, you are the one. I came back just for you because I love you so much. Oh, bless me. I do. I love you so much. It's going to be so wonderful because you are special one.
It shouldn't make any difference if anybody is Jew or Gentile. That should make no difference at all.
Oh, no. It makes a big difference. It's the Jews that are going to get hauled forward because, see, they denied him when he was here the first time. They're going to get a second chance, but there ain't going to be no three strikes and you're out. It's confess Christ or... And people like John Hagee are just hoping to wait till that great getting up morning... when they get to hold the sword.
Well, if I have to live the lifestyle that John Hagee has lived, I believe I'd quit. I mean, that guy, if you read about what the life that he's led, it's not a very good life.
he's a disgusting glutton. And he's about as far from the teachings of Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer, as one can humanly get. And still be in the same universe.
Yeah, that's the most disgusting part about what has happened to religion today. I mean,
and now Brother Deacon Asa is telling me that Boris Johnson, former mayor of London, is a favorite to become the next prime minister. And he said, "I'm telling you, Brother Bob, when Boris Johnson becomes the next prime minister and the Third Reich take the helm at the White House, they're going to be fabulous friends and everything's going to be highly tremendous." Yeah, because, you know, the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini ran right out and said, this is excellent. This is the greatest Brexit. Oh, it's a beautiful Brexit. And it's Hillary's fault. It's astonishing.
And he's
in Scotland right now.
Yeah, where people threw red golf balls with swastikas on them at him.
Yeah, I saw that. But did you notice how quickly Trump tried to make it be about him? You know, back with the Orlando shooting, he tripped over himself to get to the podium to say, "I told you so, I told you." And now with the Brexit thing, he's saying, well, there it is. There it is. The worldwide move to nations to take their own country back and to get rid of all the immigrants. I told you. Look at me. Aren't I grand? Aren't I great?
Well, this just looks like the front end of some real nastiness. And you know, the British were always known as being a sort of Chris in Germany referred to as sort of clear-eyed nationalists who would eventually, you know, see the right of things. And what'll happen, I mean, and this is down the road, what happens when everything goes to shit? And the UK goes, right, we made a terrible mistake. No, really. No, can we come back in, please? It's raining out here. No, really. What's the EU going to do? I mean, is it going to be the prodigal son returned and killed the fatted calf and all of that crap? But at the end of the day, it was fear of two things. The European court overruling the British judicial system, and the idea that if NATO, you know, you've got open borders inside the EU, so if you're from a member state in the EU, that means you can go anywhere, okay? And so consequently, they checked my passport when I landed in Paris. Nobody said squat to me in Brussels except the guy who mugged me. And then, you know, by the time we got to Frankfurt, there was nobody meeting me at the train going, are your papers in order? You know, the borders are open. And so if Turkey gets into the EU, there were a whole bunch of, you know, there's still a, we forget that there is still a nasty, nasty, nasty racist streak inside the UK. You know, maybe, I wonder if zombie Churchill saying, now perhaps they'll begin to call them wogs again. But they're terrified that if Turkey gets into the EU, that the entire nation of Turkey is going to want to move to England. And although, you know, there was an incident in Turkey the other day that kind of, it didn't surprise me. It was sad, though. There was a radio listener, or not a radio, but a listening party for the new Radiohead album in Istanbul. You know, just a bunch of hip people in a record store listening to the new Radiohead album. And a bunch of goddamned evangelical fundamentalist Muslims busted through the place and started beating on people because it was fucking Ramadan and people were drinking beer in there. I mean, redneck is redneck is redneck is redneck. I don't care if you're Muslim or Christian. Now, why would the EU allow Turkey full membership inside the European Union when they're a gnat's ass away from becoming either a fascist dictatorship, some would say they already are, or fundamentalist Islamic state? I mean, it was a couple of years ago that women who were deemed not properly dressed had the shit beaten out of them by some Muslim fundamentalists. So, you know, there's that.
Oh, and the racism is not limited to England. I mean, you look at France, there, and there's a terrible race and anti-Semitism subculture in France, and certainly Germany. Good God, they wrote
the
book.
Yeah, and the Brexit is a big victory for right-wing nationalists in the UK. It's a victory for Marine Le Pen in France. It's a victory for Geert Wilders in the Netherlands. It's a victory for the right-wing neo-Nazi asshats in Germany, because they all for some reason or another, They all want to tear it all to pieces and get back to the business of slaughtering each other. Now, I have a question coming in from Michael in Madison, and this is kind of ooky. This is one of those moments where I regret the fact that our buddy Ron in Raleigh is on second shift now, because he was he listened to, as he referred to him, you-know-who every day. Subject line coming from Michael in Madison, Brexit apologist Tom Hartman. Question for the group and the larger commune congregation. Anyone listen to Tom Hartman? He sounded to me like a real diehard Brexit apologist today, insisting that it was not racist and that we in the U.S., as well as the technocrats in the U.K. who voted to remain, are elitist for thinking so. Wondering if anybody has a take on that. As much as I'm grateful to Tom for giving Bernie a platform for several years, occasionally he has some pretty goddamn bizarre views. He gave the makers of that Vax documentary a big platform, too. Ugh. Embarrassing. And of course, we know where I stand on the issue of giving right wingers any airtime at all. They've got Fox, they've got the mainstream, the for profit media, they've got all manner of outlets. Why would anybody calling themselves progressive give them one goddamn millisecond of time? It's beyond me. Unless it's strictly for entertainment value of letting people hear you spar with them. And maybe that's what it is. But I don't give a good goddamn what Tom Hartman says when the right-wing proto-fascists are behind something and you vote the way the right-wing proto-fascists are voting, you're in the same barrel with them. Own it. Now, that's not to say that there were not problems. I mean, all the austerity movements have been brought on by those self-same technocrats that Michael and Madison mentions. But the answer to a problem is not to shatter everything into a million tiny pieces and then start trying to rebuild it on the floor of the pottery barn. There we go with the pottery barn again. Are they even still in business? I don't know. The answer is to build movements, build consensus, and take over the reins of power that way. But I'm sure there are no small number of people. I mean, witness the Texit hashtag. Who would like to see this country shattered into a million tiny pieces? Jay Cruzen says, it's not just racism, Bob. This Brexit is also a rejection of globalization. Maybe it is, but it was driven by racism. It's not a goddamn coincidence that the people who loved the Brexit and favored the Brexit also think that Trump would be jolly good for the old U.S. of A. Because Jay Cruzen says, as a consequence of having open borders, the cost of labor has been driven way down all over the EU, except, of course, in Germany, where their strong unionization keeps that in check. No, it's not just racism, but when racism is a huge component of it, blaming anything else or citing anything else doesn't answer a lot of questions. When the fascists are celebrating, pay attention.
Well, you know, there are problems when Ireland is wanting to is talking about running a poll to join with Northern Ireland again. I mean, that's getting pretty desperate.
Well, look, of all the places in the UK, Northern Ireland and Ireland are going to become a very weird place again. And that's not a place, Jules, that you want things to get weird.
No, it's not.
Because now that Great Britain, now that the UK is going to Brexit, that means that hard borders will have to be set up between Ireland and Northern Ireland with passport checks.
And Scotland is talking about calling for another vote to secede.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not just breaking from Britain from the EU. It's Ireland, Northern Ireland, Scotland, and they want to actually stay with the EU, from what I understood.
Scotland did vote largely to stay with the EU, if I understand correctly.
Yes.
Well, my guess is that if another referendum is held in Scotland, whether or not to break away from the UK, my guess is they will break away so they could join the EU. I think they, you know, one of the trends that I see is there's a trend away from centralization in terms of, you know, large countries. I mean, you saw that in Yugoslavia, that broke apart in the 80s. A lot of that was because Tito, of course, had died, and he kept the peace with, you know, by forcing everybody to get along. And you see the same thing now in Iraq, of course. You know, you should really have three countries there instead of just one, if it even is a country anymore. And, you know, at least that's sort of the trend I see towards more localized sorts of forms of government.
One point is that when Scotland ended up staying with Britain, one point was that they were being told that Britain would stay with the EU. They were being guaranteed at that point that Britain was going to stay with the EU, and that was one of the reasons that they decided to go ahead and remain a part of Britain in the first place. So that was one of the sticking points, so to speak. So,
and that was a pretty close vote, as I recall, wasn't it? Was it maybe it wasn't as close as they thought it was going to be, but
it was 10 points? Close, if I remember right.
Yeah, I think they predicted like a nail biter, but I think it ended up, you know, it ended up being maybe a 10-point margin or something. But, you know, that could easily change if Scotland wants to remain part of Europe and, you know, the UK doesn't, you know.
And the long view here, the big picture, goes back to like the 16th century. Yeah, Europe used to have these wars that were measured by decades. The 30 Years' War, the 60 Years' War, the 80 Years' War, okay? And there
was a 100 Year War too, wasn't there?
Damn right there was. And so what came out of that was a series of treaties that is generally referred to as the Peace of Westphalia. Okay? That includes the Peace of Münster, the Treaty of Osnabrück, the Treaty of Münster itself. And from that, we get the idea that the idea of the modern nation state. And what you're seeing here with these little breakup movements is the continuation of a process that began in the 20th century that represents the rejection of a lot of the notions that were results of the Peace of Westphalia. And so instead of building larger, it's the 1500s, but the Peace of Westphalia is what eventually leads to, you know, the full German state. Because the one thing you could say about Germany, you know, France was a big-ass kingdom. England was a unified kingdom. Spain, to a certain extent, even. But Germany was a handful of principalities that were aligned under the idea of the Holy Roman Empire, which was neither holy nor Roman nor an empire. And I think going forward, what you're going to see more and more is more of these tendencies to break apart. And I don't think it's good for humanity. You know, instead of being a nation, let's be a tribal group that has its own borders. How's that? There are a few places where that's being tried. How's that working out? Has there been a minute's peace where a tribal group tries to establish its own borders and then starts taking land away from the other tribal group next to it? Because last I checked, it's not working out. And by the way, with regard to Hartman, Ray just wrote in from Florida and said, progressive my ass. The only thing Tom ever cared about was Tom. Fucking guy is as phony a huckster as Ed Schultz. Hartman just hit it better until the DNC called his bluff. Man, that's tough, Ray. And Michael points out, to be clear, both on Brexit and on the vaxxed issue, Tom was not debating any right-wing guest. He gave the vaxxed guys no debate. On Brexit today, I'm simply referring to his analysis, his opinions, nothing more. I get that there are problems with the EU, but what the fuck, Cartman, really? Marty says, I stopped listening to Hartman a couple of months ago when he really became an apologist for HRC. I would have listened today, but, you know, work got in the way. Jay Cruzen says, honestly, I think the racists just jumped in front of something that was bound to happen anyway. I know some people in Britain whom I've spoken with online. There's a huge feeling of resentment towards Germany and the banks there. I've heard the EU referred to as Germany winning World War III without having to fire a shot. Well, I don't, to the extent that they were out in front pushing the Brexit before the Brexit became an issue for anybody else, I don't think the racists jumped in front of it, because fascism has been on the rise in Europe for 10, 15 years, 20. They've been waiting for their moment, and this in the UK is it. They might get themselves a nice proto-fascist prime minister in Boris Johnson, and Katie bar the door if they do.
Bob, if I could regress for a moment.
Please do.
I get so sick and tired of hearing this myth about the liberal media. One could argue that there has never been a liberal media. Let's trace the trail back all the way to the 50s. You had June Cleaver vacuuming in pearls to please her man. You had I Love Lucy, was always being chastised, and all she ever wanted to do was get on the show with that man. It's a myth. There has never been, in my opinion, a liberal media.
No, and if you look back and you find out, I forget which network it was, but maybe it was it ABC that was up to its eyeballs in the CIA at one point? I mean, that history is out there.
Yeah, but it's a myth.
Do you mean in the news department? Because all of the networks had CIA connections for years.
Right.
I'm talking news and entertainment overall. I mean, it's a myth.
Well, sure
no,
it is.
I was asking Bob. He was asking.
No, I was talking. Yeah, in the news department. But,
oh yeah, that all the networks had it.
So I mean, there's that.
And I'm not sure of the caller's name about what he's saying with the liberal media man.
That's Steve from Georgistan.
Okay. Well, I mean, let's look at it. Let's look at the origins of the three TV/radio networks. You have NBC, which was founded by General David Sarnoff. You have CBS, which was founded by William S. Paley. You have ABC, which used to be part of NBC until the government broke up the monopoly. And it was originally owned by the guy who had the Lifesaver candies. Fortune, and then Leonard Goldenson bought it and made what we now know as the more or less what became the modern ABC, both radio and television. But the thing about it is, you talk about the programming being indicative of whether or not there's a liberal slant or not in media. Let's face it, the programming is nothing more than content to break up the space between the commercials. It's all about the commercials. So you look at the the business model. Well, hell, even the phrase business model is indicative of what these entities are. They're businesses. They're corporations. They're in it, bottom line, for the buck. And it's all a matter of content, which will lull the masses into a state of complacency or diversion. And back when they were required to have strong news departments and have their owned and operated stations serve in the interest, need, and necessity of the local areas which they were in, yeah, there was some bona fide attempt to do news that mattered and analysis and information that mattered, but all that was deregulated decades ago, and now it's just simply, you know, like a printing press to print money by the tens of millions or hundreds of millions.
Yeah, the Edward R. Murrows and the Walter Cronkites, they went the way of the dodo bird. Let's face it, they don't exist anymore.
No, and they had to fight like rabid animals to be able to do what they did do. So it's not like there was a golden age, no. So you know I agree with you, I agree with you, Steve. But that just means the coverage now is not going to be much better.
And if you ever want to get your feel of the pulse, just listen to Washington Journal. I know that's a small demographic, but my goodness, some of the credence to call in there are scary.
Oh no, it went Washington Journal, or at least C-SPAN generally, went completely off the freaking rails after the end of the House gun sit-in.
Right. Right.
I got a little audio here. Let's check it out.
Okay, thanks, Bob.
We are joined by Keith in Seagrove, North Carolina. Keith is on the Republican line. Go ahead.
Hello. I'd like to disagree with everything that the past two callers have said. This is a big political show. That's all it is a show. And the thing that's really bothering me is how hypocritical it is. All these people talking about saving children and all that. The doctors, their doctors, which
here comes the abortion comment.
Abortions have killed more people Ta-da. Than anybody else, because those are American citizens that those doctors kill.
No, America dipshit, they're not.
Is conceived. It is an American citizen. And has the same rights as me and you, but it's okay for that mother to choose to kill that. But yet, this gun that can do nothing by itself is so evil. I do not understand that, and the hypocrisy is just, it blows my mind. And the Democrats are the ones who really need to get on some common sense.
Let's go and get a Republican voice now. Wayne in Roosevelt, Utah. Go ahead.
Yeah, it was just the Democrats want to have the gun control, but they want to deal away with the due process that they were offered by the Republicans on this issue. If it's not according to the Constitution, then we don't need it to be legislated into being. If we give up our guns, we'll be just like Germany was before Hitler took over control.
Another fucking idiot.
The first thing he did was disarm the population that he could control all the masses of people, and that's
And right there, that little soundbite right there is proof that particular Yahoo is a right wing media consumer, because that's been going around for years. The first thing that Adolf Hitler done. 8:09. Who had 8:09 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time? 8:09 p.m.
Fear.
Is
I did, Bob.
Oh. Okay. Okay. Did you have it's it, Rick? Me. Okay.
Yeah.
well,
Gerald gave it to me tonight.
Oh.
Actually.
Okay. Oh,
Gerald gave me the answer. That's the only way.
Gerald
way
gave
I
you know. The Hitler pool tonight. Okay.
There you go.
Because right. Gerald's busy. well, that's been first thing he done was disarm the population. which is just not even a little bit true. I mean, it's a wholesale lie. He did not disarm the German population. The German population put him in office and was happy to have him there. But, you know, not according to Cletus Q. Numbnut of Sister Fister, Utah. Oh, hell no.
Real issue and here that the federal government's trying to do is to disarm the general public so that they can control us and make us do what they want us to do. It's not the thing is,
don't make it stop,
last
Bob,
four major shootings of people, if there'd have been people who were armed with concealed carry weapons and knew how to use them, the people either wouldn't have went there to attack a gun-free zone where they knew that nobody was going to resist them, or they would have been stopped with minimal loss of life. And that's pretty much all I have to say.
All right, Wayne. Thanks for calling. We'll continue.
And there's more. There's more stupid.
Somebody called in and said we need the Second Amendment to defend ourselves from the government. The government has tanks and nukes. I mean, come on, let's get real with this thing.
Drones! Man. Drones, Cletus! Drones!
Hey, Bob.
Yeah. And I wasn't calling you. I wasn't calling you Cletus, Steve.
Now, back when I had C-SPAN.
No offense, Bob.
Back when I had C-SPAN until fairly recently, I would watch this Washington Journal every now and again and hear these calls.
You got a computer?
Yeah, but that's not the point. The point is, what is the function of the moderator on C-SPAN? Is it just to punch the button to bring up the next call? And
he doesn't
nothing?
Even do that.
Just says we have a call on a Democrat line, a call on a Republican line.
He doesn't even engage in conversation.
I know. And that's what I wonder. I mean, how does that serve anybody to let these people just
run off? Well, you're just creating an open forum to take the pulse of the nation.
Well, they need to rename the program. Instead of Washington Journal, let's call it, Nutcases Talking Out of Their Ass.
Oh, I think if we worked on that, we could come up with it, nut job confab.
A lady actually called in today and said, the people have spoken. The reason the House is Republican controlled is because the people have spoken. And I'm yelling at the TV, no, it's not. It's because of gerrymandering. Jesus.
Voter suppression. Yeah, why not? And by the way, no insult intended, Steve, to your dog named Cletus either.
And wait a minute. The lady raises a valid point, okay? In the sense that the lady that said the people have spoken, if that is true in that case, it's got to be true in every case. So why then hadn't the people not spoken at the start of this year, when in the wake of President Obama's reelection, when he nominated Judge Garland after Fat Tony Scalia died, why was it not the voice of the people being expressed?
Well, the people done spoke when they put the Republican majority in the Senate, because they didn't want that Kenyan Muslim usurper nominating any Kenyan Muslim usurper Supreme Court nominees. That's how that works.
Yeah, but this constitution that they all love to love says that Obama is in office until noon, January 20th, 2017. He's still under the Jesus, or not sure what that word is. He's under the authority, let's say, of the people having spoken in 2014 in November.
But have you seen the way that these districts are drawn out? It's crazy. If you look at it on a map, We have computer technology. Why not? Let's do this fair and cut it out into fair equal squares according to population, and then let's see who controls the house.
Well, because we've got 50 little countries.
I was watching the debate the other night, or not the debate, but the Democrats talking during the sit-in, and one of them, it did happen to mention what is true. In 2014, for the Congress of the United States, Democrats got more votes than Republicans did nationwide.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, 2014 wasn't so much a matter of the people having spoken. 2014 was, and even 2010, those off-year elections are more indicative of the people sitting on their asses being complacent, saying, let somebody else do it. God damn it, if you don't vote every time you have a chance to vote, then don't be surprised if you get a Republican House in 2010 and get a Republican Senate in 2014. God damn it, people, wake up.
Well, I mean, 2010, 2012, and 2014 were all manifestations, save for the presidential election, of the goddamn Koch brothers having spoken. Because according to Citizens United, money equals speech. And therefore, one man, one vote is long goddamn gone.
But my point is, instead of having these districts divided the way they are now, which is crazy, to favor one party or the other, we got computer technology. Have each state just divide each different in equal squares. I mean, how hard is that?
Well, because people don't necessarily live uniformly.
If I could weigh in,
jump in.
One thing that California has done with regard to congressional redistricting and also district lines for, you know, state districts, like for just state offices or, you know, what have you, is the voters passed a initiative that basically gave the process of redistricting over to the citizen-appointed panel. And that's actually worked quite well. And the Supreme Court recently upheld that, and I think a few other states have it. And the result of that has been, I think, that the Democrats actually got like two extra seats, you know, before and after, you know, the initiative was passed based on, you know, just the way that the citizens drew the district. So, you know, I think you eliminate, you know, or certainly lessen the chance of gerrymandering if the politicians whose offices aren't at stake have no role, basically, in the redistricting process.
Yeah, exactly. It's simply a matter of the people in charge in these other gerrymandered places. If they wanted the result to be different, they would behave in a manner that was consistent with that result coming into being. But they don't want that because they know that therein lies their power. If they can't draw the lines in some fucking crazy quilt way, then they don't get to be in charge anymore and work their will. But again, voter apathy has something to do with it, too. If you look in some of these congressional districts of the narrow margins that some of these House members have won by, these Republican House members, something could have been done if the people were about doing it. But they apparently weren't. They thought, well, you know, let Bob do it or let Fred do it. You know, and that therein lies madness, because that's when you get screwed.
Well, they drew Dennis Kucinich out of existence. Perfect example.
Yep. Well, they forced him into a runoff with Marcy Kaptur. And so, essentially, Dennis's constituents were disenfranchised.
Can I bring up some news?
Go right ahead.
A referendum front in California.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be another gun control initiative on the ballot this November, which limits, you'll have to have a background check to buy ammunition. It's part of what I read today in the paper. I think it was today. And then we have already limited the clip sizes. For like if you have an AR-15, you can't have a clip holds more than 10 bullets.
Yeah.
Well, it's going to be illegal to have a, I mean, they kind of waived that if you had one, but now it's going to be illegal if you have a high capacity clip. You have to turn them in.
Well, good. The only problem is, and, you know, not to be just a my usual little ray of sunshine, the problem is you're next door to Arizona. And you're next door to Nevada. Right.
The NRA's hair is going to be on fire over that one. You can count on it.
But the thing is, that means people will bring them into the state, and if somebody wants to do some high-quality killing, they'll just cross the border. That's, you know, and what that does, Sparky, is that points out the need for uniformity of our gun laws. We don't need 50 little countries making 50 little countries' gun laws.
Yeah, but Bob, you're a step ahead in the process here. You've got to let the referendum happen first to see if it actually goes into law. Because, I mean, if you thought that the Proposition 8 vote here in California was heavily influenced by, oh, I don't know, the Catholic Church and the Mormon Church, okay, for marriage equality, you ain't seen nothing yet with this new gun law referendum. The NRA is going to, you know, you're not going to get a place to park. There'll be so many NRA people in the state. And money, good God, the shitstorm of money that they will pour into fighting that referendum is going to... The only people that will win, again, getting back to TV, are going to be the damn media outlets, the TV and the radio stations. Selling that ad time, boy. Baby, that's what that's about.
Yeah. I do need to interject for just a moment because the idea of entering Moran Monday with a $525 fundraising hole fills me with dread and, you know, what comes after. Jack this evening, thank you very kindly for being the only one to step up. Jack took us down from 375 to 325, and hopefully we'll get, you know, we'll knock out a little bit more of it so that at least maybe, God almighty, it's only $400 on Monday. But that's where we are. A couple of notes. I get some dandies from Steve in China, and this is another one. If political economy works itself out to something like racism, what else is new? We are all, one way, one time, or another, racists. We hold at least racial inclusive, exclusive views. It is a hard education trying to leave an ugly upbringing behind. And if you don't have a real living relationship with a significant number of people who are not members of your race, tribe, clan, then in effect you are defined by race. No matter how much you protest or try to feel non-racist or insist upon your liberal outlook. Do you associate with members of the other? Do you share important holidays or socialize casually? Have you always counted the other as one of your own? I don't mean tolerating somebody on the job. I don't mean nodding to that nice man or woman on the street. I certainly don't mean what you say or what you read most of the time away from your closet, really. If your neighborhood is conspicuously lacking in representative members of the other, well, ain't you a lucky chap now? Race? There's no such thing. But there is the difference between living in the big, thriving, cosmopolitan Gotham and cowering out there in the sticks. If that's racism and economic reality, so be it. By the way, as soon as we get to that other planet, we'll be killing each other over money and bitching about that race of aliens. Star Trek fan got smarts, right? Steve in China. Clarence with a note. Hey, Cletus, your AR-15 is no match for microwave, laser, drone, or nuclear, biological, and chemical government technology. Yeah, try explaining that to him. But meanwhile, a Bundy follower, a Bundyite, was recently busted for trying to blow up a Bureau of Land Management building. And regarding C-SPAN, Jack in Shreveport says, and if you think you can hear some nutters calling into Washington Journal, you should see the Twitter stream for it. Scary stuff. It shows how effective the right-wing propaganda is. So hopefully in the next 36 minutes or so, we'll knock down some of the $325. I'm sorry to have interrupted, Sparky.
Bob, I was going to say, please, everybody out there, we do not want a Bob exit here. There's already been a Brexit. We don't want to have what happened. What was that? Was that in May, Bob, when the show was suspended?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, can be here today and gone tomorrow. That's the problem, you know?
Yeah, a Bobsit.
Bobsit, there you go. Yeah, we don't want a Bobsit. Please avoid a Bobsit. Vote no on the Bobsit. So that means contribute
yeah,
to...
Yeah, vote remain. Yeah, vote remain.
There you go, vote remain.
Yeah, votes, exactly. Votes are tallied at PayPal. But, yeah, thank you for that, Rick. You were going to say, Sparky?
Oh, I don't remember now.
Well, ain't that always the case.
But I got one thing about the Brexit. I was reading this morning that it's going to hurt the British film industry, and it might screw up Game of Thrones.
Yeah, because a whole bunch of Game of Thrones is shot where?
In Ireland, I think.
Yeah.
But it'll lose a lot of investment money from the European continent. That's what I was getting out of it for some reason.
Well, at a 52-48 split, you know, one wonders if a simple majority should have been the metric on this. If you've got one more nut job than sane people, should the nut job be able to determine the outcome of one's national future? I mean, and let's see. Here's a quote from commuter Jonathan Campbell James, who said, "It's a vindication of 1,000 years of British democracy. From Magna Carta all the way through to now, we've had a slow evolution of democracy, and this vote has vindicated the maturity and depth of the democracy in our country." Meanwhile, a 24-year-old woman named Olivia Songster Bullers said, "It's absolutely disgusting. Good luck to all of us, I say, especially those of us trying to build a future with our children."
It might be helpful, Bob, for a second or a minute or two. We've got to remember that we cannot superimpose the American election system onto Britain because, as I understand it, there, first of all, the run-ups to any sort of vote in terms of time is always less than it is here, way less. And then there's also the matter, I don't think that they have what we have here in the sense of political commercials. The way that people over there get their information is basically print media and online media, as opposed to an endless stream of political ads on all the outlets.
No, that may I agree. Changed. It's not quite the same thing, and commercial speech is not afforded the tender adoration that it is in the United States, and among other things, the British take their libel laws very seriously, and it's much easier to get sued over there. But that does not mean that there were not hardcore. It was not a hardcore campaign.
I wouldn't think that was the case. I'm just wondering how were these people influenced? This 52%. Do they have voter apathy over there the way we do here?
They had a 72% turnout, Scott.
Okay, well, I didn't know that. That's what I was wondering.
And see, this is where Jay Cruzan's suggestion that it isn't really about racism kind of runs up against a wall. If 4%, if 3%, if 2.1%. Of the votes cast in that referendum were cast by racists worrying about the browning of Britain, then racism was the reason that it succeeded. And that's, you know, and that's terrifying. My point, though, is that, within our system, I cannot speak to the system in the UK. I don't know. But we have certain things that we consider to be so serious, so grave, that just counting lunatics versus sane people and finding out you've got one more lunatic than you have sane is not enough to make a thing pass. I mean, Jesus Christ, our Senate operates on the idea that you don't have a majority unless you have 61 votes out of 100.
I thought it was 60.
Well, 60, but 61 to really get over the top. And
it used to be higher, didn't it? Used to be
No. This is a relatively new vintage. Everything has to meet the 60 vote threshold. It's not even in the rules, but it's just what the Republicans say it has to be.
Oh, okay.
Let's say we wanted to pass a constitutional amendment, any constitutional amendment. First of all, it has to be voted on in the Congress. And once it's passed in the Congress, it has to go out to the states. But in order to be ratified, it has to be ratified by the state legislatures of 2/3 of the states. If the national legislature wants to override a presidential veto, they got to get a 2/3 majority, not just one more nutcase. And so maybe this is a self-inflicted wound. I mean, I guess pure democracy does mean that one more nutcase carries the day. If we're talking about pure democracy. But just by way of understanding pure democracy, one more nutcase got Socrates killed. One more nutcase exiled, oh God, who was the father of democracy in Athens? The guy who brought it in, who made it fashionable. Yeah, they chucked him
out. Pericles?
No, not Pericles.
No.
Cleisthenes, perhaps? But, you know, a simple majority will get the job done. I mean, Jesus Christ, kids on playground basketball courts playing one-on-one have a rule that says you have to win by two. Or you have to win by three. You know, you can't just sneak in with that last basket and walk away going, I win. But in effect, what Great Britain, what the UK did was declare that they were going to let their future be determined by whether or not they had more sane people than nut jobs. And you know, Boris Johnson, sane guy. Yeah, okay. You know, and look at here's a thing that probably played into it. Consider that London has its first brown mayor. Do you think that didn't drive the ultra-nationalists and the nationalists and the Britain for Britons and all the white people, a whole bunch of white people just batshit crazy? Let's remember something here. We tend to focus, because we are Merkins, on our history with race. But for the love of... let's remember, we didn't invent it. We just put it into extremely efficient, brutal usage. Race was invented by white Europe. It was invented by the Spanish. It was invented by the Portuguese. It was invented by the Dutch. And it goddamned well was invented by the English, who put it to brutal work in places like India, and who exported it to places like here, and to places like Australia, which up until not that long in the past had an Australia for Australians policy, as if white people in Australia had been there for 40,000 years of human history instead of the dark-skinned people who actually had. And I'm sorry, it just kind of pisses me off. There's no getting around the Brexit as a triumph of bigotry and racism. Note coming in from Ron in the balmy and not oversaturated north. Has anyone pointed out the irony of the English bitching over their curry and Earl Grey tea about the immigrants when their heritage and pride stems from a history of being the country that colonized, pillaged, ravaged more countries than any other empire? I love it. I love it when I get on the same wavelength as other members of the community, because I think I was just alluding toward the, I think Ron and I should probably virtually clink glasses and say, yeah, cheers.
And getting back to earlier in the program, the general question had to do with, the events now with this vote to leave the EU by Britain. What, if anything, does that portend for the political scene in the U.S.? And I know that there's more than a few people who believe that the Margaret Thatcher's rise to power in the 70s, the late 70s, ushered in Reagan's ascension here in this country 2 years later. And Boris Johnson, now poised to be the next prime minister, good God, of England. What does that say about, is a new version of Thatcherism cropping up in Britain? And does that mean that we're going to get Trump in charge here?
Or Queen Hillary,
yeah, because it's...
back up. Those are not equivalents. Hillary and Trump are not equivalents. The terrifying thing out of the Brexit is a sort of, because all the smart money, said, oh, well, of course we won't vote leave. I mean, we're the British. We're staid and we're stolid and we're all stiff upper lip and we're sensible. And then, a bunch of drunken soccer hooligans said, fuck right we are. I'm voting leave, even if I don't know what it means. Because I don't want a bunch more packies in here.
You're right, Bob. Hillary and Trump are not equivalents. And I can't tell you the amount of grief that I'm catching from a lot of my progressive friends, because I'm forced to pinch my nose until it bleeds and vote for Hillary. I mean, but what the hell? What other choice do I have at this point?
Well, I mean, that's kind of where I am. I mean, I can't bring myself to just piss on my franchise with a protest vote, whatever. And in the case of West Virginia, I'm gonna stay true to my word, because I have to try to counterbalance the stupidity. I bear no love for Hillary.
No, me either. Not whatsoever.
The more I read about what happened in Honduras, the more disgusted I become. There is plenty of evidence to suggest that she goddamn well knew that death squads, American-sponsored, American-trained right-wing death squads, were targeting activists and protesters for murder. And this isn't all Benghazi. No, this is documented stuff.
No,
the blood of
that.
Berta Cáceres is not just on her hands, it's up to her earlobes.
But when you weigh the two evils against one another, who would T-Rump put on the Supreme Court? Who would Hillary put on the Supreme Court? And that's going to affect us 30, 40 years out.
Well, there's that, but I'm more concerned about the immediate effects of what kind of crazy ass bills sponsored by, say, Steve Cantaloupe's King or Louis Asparagus Gohmert would T-Rump sign into law? Bills that were shepherded through the Senate by, say, Jim Inhofe, for Christ's sakes.
Oh, I hear you. Steve King said after the protest he's going to go out and buy another gun. Now, there's the
well, Steve King also tried. Steve King also tried to stop the Treasury from putting Harriet Tubman on the $20 bill.
these people are crazy.
I mean, it's not like he suggested an alternative black person who he said was more important. He said, she was historic and stuff, but, I mean, she wasn't historic like Andrew Jackson was historic. Well, you know, that's true, because Harriet Tubman was not responsible for the genocide of God knows thousands, tens of thousands of Native people. Harriet Tubman never had a taste for wading in up to his hip bones in slaughter of indigenous people. That's true. All right, late, and I wasn't barking at you, Steve, you know that.
No, I understand, Bob. It's
cool. It makes me crazy. So we got 20 minutes remaining in the program, and I just had a note from our buddy Harold. Harold, the president and CEO of the Secret Open Carry Roundup Society, the Happy Trail Secret Open Carry Roundup Society, that he is sponsoring 8 matching challenges in order to finish the week and get started on Moran Monday. The Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society will match dollar for dollar 8 $50 contributions as they come in. And that's a big deal. And another big deal is that Karen jumped in as well, because she had a good day and her United States Postal Service rickety delivery jeep did not break down in the North Georgia heat. So thank you both to Harold and to Karen and Steve and earlier to Jack for helping us along in a very, very big way. So there's 50, count them, 50, $50. There are 8 $50 challenges awaiting being met.
Wow, that's amazing. That's blows away what I just offered. I put up a $20 challenge. So
well, if we take that and that and we put it with Karen, that means there's $15 to go to knock down the first of the 8 Secret Open Carry Roundup Society slots. So thank you very kindly, Jules. Thank you very much indeed.
Well, we have to keep you on somehow, some way, Bob. You're a national treasure.
Well, thank
you.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate that.
International treasure.
Yes, I've been listening to him since the terrestrial radio days and beyond. And
my God, you were listening. Wait. You were listening back in Beckley?
Well, yeah, when you used to do commercial radio.
Oh,
absolutely.
Oh, my God. That's a pretty small fraternity.
Well, probably not that small. I'm sure everybody else here was in on that as well.
No, you'd be surprised.
No, not me. I come in 2009.
Okay.
But there are a small handful. Yeah. I appreciate the kind words, and they make me kind of uncomfortable because, you know, I don't wake up every morning saying, "Hello, I'm Bob Kincaid, goddamn awesome hero," because I'm not.
Well, I'm sorry. I don't make you feel uncomfortable. It's just from the heart. That's how I feel.
Well, I appreciate it, and
Karen and I both.
And it's a validation of what we try to do here, and to me, it's a validation of the entire community that you guys have built, not me. So, no, thank you very kindly, Steve, and convey my thanks to Karen too, please.
Before we get into any other conversation, I wanted to ask: did you ever get a hold of Pete in New Jersey?
I haven't heard any more from Pete, but, you know, he gave out his email and I presume he listens most nights.
Okay. I want to,
yeah, as noted. Yeah. FYINation.com was what he wanted to know.
Okay. I want to try to swap that email from you because I wanted to, send him a little remark, because the email that I tried, I kept bouncing back at me. So I'll, send you an email about that. I just wanted to check if you had a valid email. So,
well, I mean, I have what he gave me on air, what I understood.
Thanks for bringing that up, Jules. That has been weighing on me ever since I heard it. I mean, That was some of the most profound radio I've heard in a long time. And anybody with a soul needs to listen to that. I mean, my God, a man that would not want to, you know, take a kidney transplant because of the financials of it. You know, it's just staggering. It's just staggering, the situation we find ourselves in.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? Get a kidney transplant and then sell the other kidney so you can pay for the anti-rejection drugs?
Well, yeah, if I understood him correctly, he said he would not accept a kidney because he could not afford the anti-rejection drugs.
Right.
That's a hell of a note.
Well, I mean, it's a hell of a commentary on the capitalist, profitized, monetized system of healthcare that we have in this country.
And to
the extent that we were talking a minute ago about things that bother us about Hillary, you know, my God, you can't sit there and say we're going to make the ACA better. More profitized health care is not the answer to people's problems who have problems like that. And people who have problems like that are not a small number of people.
And it's not health care, it's insurance, and insurance is not health care.
Well, ain't that the truth? Exactly. I mean, but you know, people are limited. Otherwise, you know, fairly mobile people are limited in their choices. I've mentioned that from time to time I get the occasional email, you know, Bob, why don't you leave? You know, West Virginia has so many problems. Bob, why don't you leave? And the answer is always, and go where? Because as crazy as it may sound, one place that I would consider going back to, as right-wing and lunatic as it is the place where I was born. But I can't do that. Because I'll be I will be at the mercy of my innards at that point, and there will be no doctoring, and there will be no prescriptions, because you know they've got freedom in Talabama. You know, freedom to die.
Universal. That's what it is. Universal health care would release so many people to do so many different things.
It would change this country in ways we can barely express. It would be, to quote Lincoln, universal single-payer health care in this country would be a new birth of freedom.
What it would mean is a lot of people would not have to suffer through things. A lot of people would not end up with conditions that they don't have to live through. If we would have had universal health care, you know, 10 years ago, I probably would not have ended up having strokes that I had, because we would have found out that what my condition was long before then, and I wouldn't have been on the medications that I was. I mean, it would make a difference in a lot of people, and thousands, hundreds of thousands of people's lives.
I have no doubt.
And again, it comes back to, you know, are we going to focus on the effect or are we going to focus on the cause? And just as with gerrymandering, the people who have a vested interest in keeping things the way they are, they don't want to change anything. Because of what a massive change, the changing of it would create. And that's the troublesome part. I mean, we already have a handle on what the problem is. We already have a handle on what the solution might very well be. It's just a matter of getting it handled.
Good point. And a lot of this, getting back to the cause and effect thing, falls back, in my opinion, to the food industry and the crap that we've been force-fed, especially the generation, you know, 60s, 70s, and 80s. My first recollection, and we touched on this in the chat room last night, of self-eating was eating crap that I couldn't even pronounce some of the ingredients in it. You know that can't be healthy. It cannot be.
If polysorbate 80 was not on your granny's, in your granny's spice rack, you probably don't need to eat it. Now, I know that might sound, that's probably kissing cousin to being an anti-vaxxer. I'm sorry. But
well,
close to being an anti-vaxxer, not even close.
There is a school of thought when it comes to eating that if it didn't exist in the form that it was 100 years ago, don't buy it and don't eat it. But even that's a little tricky because, you know, where do eggs come from? Chickens. Where do chickens live? A lot of them in industrial chicken farms. You know, where do apples come from? Orchards and trees.
Oh, I saw, look, I saw a video the other day, and I presume it was in Mexico. I saw a video of how they kill cattle. And, of course, I'm sure it was sponsored by PETA or somebody like that, and it was aimed at people like me. And it was horrifying.
It'll rip your guts out, won't it, Bob?
Well, because that's what they do. Well, yeah.
Yep, yeah.
Yeah, the machine with the upside down. Have you seen it?
Unfortunately, yes.
So, you know. And there's no pretty way to kill an animal. And I'm guilty, I freely confess, of... You know, I spend a lot of time talking about mountaintop removal and talking and trying to explain to people that electricity in certain areas doesn't come from your wall socket. It comes from, you know, the bodies of poisoned people in Appalachia in many instances. But I'm a human being and I'm capable of cognitive dissonance and I'm capable of compartmentalizing. And so, you know, if I drive by Outback Steakhouse, I think, steak. If I see that video, I think, you know, I'm going to eat grass for the rest of my life.
I hear you, brother.
But I'm not that far removed from my rural and agricultural past. It was just one generation back for me. That every year there was a hog and a cow.
Sure, and there's no pretty way to kill a chicken.
Kept on this acre, and there were plenty of chickens.
Right.
And my mother explained to me, I was never much of one for neck wringing. She said, I was more of a hatchet girl.
Right. Put the neck on the block and hatchet, yep.
And then, you know.
Hypnotize the chicken first before you cut its head off.
No, you just block it and chop it.
No, you take your finger and you put it right in front of their beak and you stroke it back and forth while you're holding the head of the chicken. And then after a couple times, you just let your hand go and the chicken won't move and you can chop its head off. My mother taught me that. She grew up in a ranch.
See, yeah, there you are.
California.
You're like me. You're one generation removed.
Let me say for the record that Punky the Cockatiel is highly unhappy with the way that this conversation is now going.
Hey, Scott, can I ask Punky a question?
Yeah, let me put you on speaker.
Okay. Hey, Punky. Hey, Punky, how are you? How do you feel about the Brexit? Are you for or against?
He thinks it's kind of seedy.
Okay.
He's trying to figure where the voice is coming from. And he's walked up to the mirror above his house to consult with his friend in there to see how to respond.
Are you a pretty bird? Are you a pretty bird? Yes, you are, aren't you? Yes, I can tell.
And I've got to make an announcement. The first of the Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society slots has been filled. There are 7 more to go. Thank you very kindly, Marcia, in Oregon. And there's $12 to go to fill the slot that Jules and Steve and Karen and Earther are working on. There's $12 to go on that one, so that would fill 2 of the slots. And with 6 minutes to go, I'd say maybe there's a fighting chance of doing that. And Jay Cruzen, of course, noted, PETA, people eating tasty animals, right? Yeah, right. But there's a, you know, there's a big difference between eating industrial food and eating, and you know, I'll grant this much to the people that, you know, the people who are into hunting. And that is this, you know, they're close to the, you know, they're close to what they're eating, and they understand the ramifications of it. Slot number two just got filled. Thank you very kindly to our buddy Robert in Australia. So that's two, six to go. Thank you very much indeed, Robert. Good to hear from you. And what's the status of the group post program tonight and post Malloy tonight?
Well, lately when Grant comes on, we let him host the group because his Linus system won't let him get in if I'm hosting. He has to be the host.
Wow, so that's weird.
So that might happen again tonight. I don't know if Grant's going to be around, but if he shows up, well, no, it's just the way it works. I read the Skype trying to get Gerald into the group today. I read all the operating systems and how what it would do and everything, and I went to Linux and they said you can host a group call but you can't join one.
Yeah, it's really weird.
So, that is strange.
That is real weird. So is that does
yeah,
that
Devin figured that out.
Does that usually kick up about 5 after 11 Eastern time, 5 after 8 Pacific?
Yeah, as soon as Malloy's over.
Okay, wonderful. Well, I guess it's time to get out of here. Thanks for a very scintillating conversation.
And thanks, Bob. I appreciate you letting me be a part of this. I really do. I hope everybody has a great evening.
I'm the gatekeeper here, Steve.
Thanks, sir.
Yeah, that's Duncan. That's Sparky Duncan, that does all the letting. But thanks for joining in. Thanks for joining in, Rick and Charlie. And Steve and Jules and Scott, thank you all very kindly. And thanks always to Sparky for hosting and moderating the whole affair. And thanks very kindly to everybody who contributed this evening. And thank you very kindly to Harold, President and CEO of the Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society. There are 6 remaining $50 matching challenge slots available. Thanks very much indeed. Have a wonderful weekend, everybody. Moran Monday will be here before you know it. And as we watch the fallout from the Brexit, I got a feeling they're going to stack up like cordwood. Y'all take care. Thanks always go out to our volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room, to our news ninjas, to John Fox, to Ben Birch, to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. They are organizing relief efforts right now for the flooding here in West Virginia. Rains like that are always nervous business in the Coal River Valley because Buffalo Creek. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.